This is CliffCentral.com.
Hey. Look who it is.
I'm just doing a bit of a stretch. How are you, bro? Nice to see you, man. Come have a seat. Grab that chair over there and make yourself comfortable.
Sorry,
this is Mabali Moloi.
I just need to try and remain composed. Sorry.
Well, what's the problem here, Mab? So you're having hot flushes?
Listen, you know Thapelo has a rather impressive effect on a lot of ladies. You know this for sure, right?
Really?
Oh, yeah. Look at you this? Pretending you like about? You don't know.
Oh, you've been lining up Poontang for years.
No, he's a married man. He's a married man.
Yeah, he is.
I've had my fair share.
You know, that's an interesting way of wearing those headphones.
Why? The one off?
Well, no, because you've got the thing that goes over the top of your head, you've put at the back.
Yeah, I don't know why. I always do. Even with the voiceover recordings, just naturally, it fits.
How are you, man?
I'm very good, my brother.
Yourself? What's been happening? Thapelo Mokoena, everybody. He's in to talk to us. Well-known South African actor, television presenter. Many of us will know him from various shows that he's presented over the years. Various shows he's been in. And it's nice to see you. It's nice to actually sit down and talk to you. Also, the face of Hunters Dry.
Was.
Well, you were. Yeah. What happened there?
Oh, the journey.
They moved on.
Yeah, we moved on. You know,
goddamn liquor brands. They're so fickle.
What, 9 years fickle? I think, yeah, I had a good run. And it was time, man. You know, it was time. It was time.
It was 9 years, huh?
9 years, my sir. 9 years.
And people will also remember Fear Factor, because that was a big thing.
Yes, indeed.
And then I'm trying to think what the other big ones were. So many. You are now also involved in a whole lot of production. And you put these things together behind the scenes, which is sometimes a little more gratifying, right?
Absolutely.
You don't want to be in front of the camera all the time.
Well, I really enjoy being in front of the camera, but I'm still hungry after I get off set. You know, it's just naturally, I think I'm from a family of business people, and I've got the knack for business, and I really enjoy creating, and I enjoy my own. I enjoy ownership. And the producing side of things, the behind the scenes, gives me that, and I'm able to create my own, man. Like, and you know, and use my creative side to come up with stuff. Acting means
you fulfilling work for somebody
and expressing somebody else's vision, which is great. But I think I'm a creator.
I think that's exactly what it is. And aren't we all just in a struggle to be in control of our own destiny? That's what we want, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think ideally, yeah. But I don't think we all made for that.
You think some people are just, they'd prefer not to have that because it's stressful?
It is. You know, I believe life offers leaders and followers, and we all have a chance to decide who we are in the bigger scheme of things. And if you're a follower, you best be the best damn follower there is out there. Mm. Be the number one follower. Don't be the number two follower. If you're a leader, be the kind of leader that can empower followers to lead.
Now, you seem to be the sort of guy who makes a decision about things and then you follow it through and you make sure that it's done properly.
That's what I am becoming.
I mean, whether it's in work, whether it's in relationships, whether it's in fun, all of these kinds of things, you've got a plan.
I do. Yeah. I do. I know.
Some people get into life, they don't have a plan. They'll see where it goes.
Absolutely. I think I was also a victim to that at a much younger time in my life, in my 20s. But I think every small town person goes to the big city or to a big city to go dig up something, you know, or leaves home with the plan to bring back something.
Mm-hmm.
I knew when I left Ladysmith, when my brothers and I left Ladysmith, which is a small town in northern Natal.
It's nothing there, right? Nothing happens.
Oh, nothing is a bit harsh.
No, nothing happens. Come on. Nothing's happened in Ladysmith.
Yeah, nothing much. Just Ladysmith, Black Mambazo.
Yeah, you know.
You know, nothing much. Just Sugar Boy Ray Malinga.
Yeah, but they got out of there. That's when they became
so. True story.
No one wants to stay in Ladysmith.
What?
No.
Well, yeah, true. You're so mean, Gareth. What is this?
Yeah, that's it.
No. Listen, you'd not be the guy that you are now if you'd stayed in Ladysmith. Your talent would have been, you would have been the most popular guy in the school play.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't necessarily have become the star that you are.
I fully agree.
Right? I mean, this is the thing about urbanization or people migrating from here to there. You've got to go wherever your heart takes you. If you're a farmer in Ladysmith and that's what you want for your life, there's nothing shameful about that.
No, of course, of course.
If you want to be the grocery store owner in some horrible little town, but that town is the place you want to be, then you must do it.
But there are bigger stages.
Sure.
That's the fact, you know. And I think everybody who's in a smaller town always has visions of being in a bigger space where they could express themselves on a bigger stage, where they could have bigger opportunities to, you know, to become whatever they want to become. So for me, I was always conscious of the fact that I think every small town person is always trying to get out, always trying to see bigger. And I'm just glad that I managed to sort of keep the focus. You know, I made a lot of mistakes. I took wrong detours along the way as well. Like a
really
person.
Like what? What have you done?
Like, you
haven't made mistakes. You seem to have everything together.
I learn a lot from my mistakes, and I think I'm very hard on myself.
What mistakes did you make? Come on.
Like in business, you know.
Have you lost money?
Yeah.
Had
the wrong partners. Were you there?
No. I'm just asking because this.
But it's exactly that, you know. It's literally that. It's learning that you can believe and trust in your own efforts as a person, and maybe it is better to do so than always relying on the team effort. You know, one of the mistakes I made earlier on in my business career, especially in production, was I did not believe or trust enough in my own potential, in my own efforts. Maybe I was young, but I always felt like I needed to pull others with me and do it together as a collective, as opposed to trust in my ideas, my efforts, and execute them as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
In my early 30s, now I'm 34 years old, I really believe that I am enough.
How did it change?
I got burnt.
Yeah, but that normally, to some people, that would create insecurity. It wouldn't give you confidence in your own abilities. So how did you manage to get that right, that you believed in yourself, despite the fact that there'd been mistakes and you hadn't been perfect?
I wouldn't say I got it right, but I'll say I'm certainly on my path to just becoming a strong businessman as an individual, and I've focused on sharing less of what's going on in my head and just executing. But I think you know, if it happens more than once, you start questioning yourself and you start really.
If failure happens more than once?
If failure or disappointment.
Okay.
You know, one of or two of my very big ideas that I came up with were taken from me by partners that I had faith in, that I believed in, and I had to spend a good 2-3 years of my life fighting for those ideas.
Jeez.
Eventually, I got them back. Eventually,
did you have to go to court?
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely.
And that costs a fortune.
It
right?
cost me money that I didn't have. And I think these are lessons, you know, like if somebody had told me early enough that you are enough or you are well equipped to make it happen on your own, to execute it on your own, to make mistakes on your own, as opposed to making mistakes as a collective, maybe I would have learned earlier. But at the same time, I appreciate what the lessons have given me. You know, I feel like if I hadn't gone through those incidents.
Don't you sometimes think those lessons are expensive?
They are expensive, but rather learning them with a few hundred thousand rands than millions. You know, and I feel like if I hadn't, and maybe it's the way I see things, but I appreciate those lessons now, not then, but now I look back and I'm like, you think you had me? And it's something I've taken.
And what impact does that experience have on future partnerships? Do you just kind of
not, are you cynical about
you
everybody?
Don't trust anybody ever anymore?
My grandmother always said, "Love them all, but don't trust any of them." And I thought that was very hard, but she was right, you know. And it's not so much trust for me; it's more of learning to secure my ideas, my visions, you know. So I am backed up now, you know. I don't do anything without my legal team.
You've got a whole team?
Well, yeah.
Wow.
You have to, you know. Firstly, we don't have enough entertainment lawyers in this country.
No, we don't.
But I've started learning to consult in a very big way. You know, I have mentors and I have advisors, especially for business. Not so much.
Is this in the movie making business?
Absolutely. This is production.
Okay.
This is purely production.
And isn't that because there's so many creative people in there? And creative people always assume, or most of them assume, it's all going to work out. Don't worry about the details of the business. As long as we're creating something people want, it'll be fine.
It's passion without business guidance.
Mm.
You know, passion. Artists suffer from just misplacing passion. You know, especially in my field, you've got people with so much potential, but they go home with nothing because they're just infusing passion and forgetting to add the business savviness, and they forget to add the financial fluency and just understanding the numbers side of things. You know, it's a tough one, but like, if you don't have the power to appoint a team that thinks that way for you, you kind of have to think like that for yourself until you can afford that team. Akina Motoso told me something very important the one day. He said, you do as much as you can on your own until you can afford to appoint those that do what they do best. And it's true.
That's a good way of going about it. Because,
it is, you know.
I mean, even this morning we were talking about how Telkom laid off pretty much half of their workforce and now their balance sheet's coming in really positive. They didn't need all those people.
Look at that.
And you can do more with less people sometimes.
True.
Especially if those people know what they're doing and they are the best in their business. And you don't want to hire less than the best, right?
No, you don't.
Otherwise, you might as well do it yourself anyway.
And the thing is, there is a time of sacrifice in life. There is a time where you kind of have to be doing everything to get to a certain point.
Yeah.
But you need to understand that that's part of your journey. That's part of your sacrifice. And you need to get over sacrifice at some point and afford those that do what they do best.
So what kind of a life do you have now? Because having gone through all these legal battles and also having had ups and downs, I mean, I looked at your CV. You've done so many roles.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people don't even remember, but Long Walk to Freedom.
Yeah.
Nothing for Mahala, Between Friends, Mrs. Right Guy, you got the short films, you got drama series, we've got soapies, we've got reality shows.
Yeah.
This is just unreal. You've got to be one of the most in-demand actors in the country.
It's been a very fruitful journey for me. You know,
yeah.
I don't remember a day not working in such a tough industry. You
it
know,
is tough.
12 years in this industry, and I feel like God and my angels have really been on the move with me. I'm lucky. I'm not lucky, but I think preparation has met opportunity in my case.
Mm.
You know, I'm really sure about what I'm trying to do with my career. I'm really sure about the kind of characters and the roles that I'm trying to play. I'm really sure about what I should be doing every single year. I turn down a lot of work.
Do you?
I do.
That's for some people, that's difficult because the more work they think, oh, that's more money.
It's money, yeah.
But the more you say yes to, the more you restrict your future, because if you're saying yes to 10 different projects and something amazing comes up and it falls into that same time frame, you have to say no to that thing because you've already committed to the other 10 things.
Yeah, look, you do. You win some, you lose some. It's always a scheduling challenge, and sometimes you can't do what you really want to do because you're busy with another contract.
Have you ever missed anything in terms of like big opportunities?
Yeah.
Give me an idea. What happened?
I lost a feature film, a lead role in a feature film shot in Toronto with a great American producer because I was signed onto a soapy or a drama series, which is and I work.
I just shat a little.
Oh, you can say shit in the show?
You do whatever you want.
Oh, wow. I mean, and I've been building my career to get to a point where I can tell stories, African stories on an international platform.
Right.
But
this would have been amazing.
One moment where everything that I've been praying for this year, that cherry on top, the feature film, which is my love, feature films, came through. The American director loved my performance, immediately told me, look, you're coming to Toronto in 2 weeks. And I was like, what, 2 weeks? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, 2 weeks might not work because I'm scheduled on the show. And it's my storyline. And I'm the big character on this new show that I've just jumped on. And it got me to make a couple of tough decisions. You know, I had to really look at it and I was like, This is why I've always said I can never be on a soapy for longer than 8 months, because it's a season for me. And
but soap operas in this country, that's good regular income.
It is, but I don't really do it for the money. You know, I'm trying to build, I'll survive. I'll sleep on a full stomach. That's one thing for sure.
But have you made, out of all these projects that you've been involved in, have you made decent money?
Yes, I have.
You've got good investments? You've been looking after that kind of thing?
Yes.
Because you don't want to end up one of those actors one day that they have to have some benefit concert for and they drag you out on stage and people go, oh, shame, look, there he is.
That would be my fault.
Yeah,
that
it would be.
That would absolutely, would be. That would be 100% my fault.
Because, you know, in this country, we talk a lot about artists who, whether it's singers, whether it's actors, whether it's people who've, I don't know, painted things, whatever it might be. We talk a lot about how, oh, shame, but they need support, and later on in their careers, nobody cares, but it's their fault.
It is. Look, no actor in this country can honestly sit and say they're wealthy or rich off acting.
No.
We do not make
all
money.
Musicians, frankly.
All musicians. Yeah. You do not buy the house of your dreams with acting money in this country.
No.
You do not create a living for you and your family with acting money.
Correct.
But here's the thing. You use your acting to position yourself, and you teach the audience out there how to receive your offering or your brand or your DNA of artist. And what you do with that is you position yourself so well that you attract spin-off business. The commercials, my deal with Hunter's Dry, my deal with all the other brands, my voiceover contracts, my appearances, my corporate alignments, my ambassador
merchandising
my fitness sponsors, Nike, my brand associations. That's purely off the fact that I position myself in a certain way as an artist, as an individual. And that's where you make the money. The spin-off is where you really start seeing.
Because there might be actors listening to us now.
Yeah.
You know, people who are just they're at university maybe, or they are at school and they want to be an actor one.
Yeah.
And they look at you and they go, well, this guy's very inspiring. He's the kind of guy who's got it right. And in many ways you have. Let's give credit where it's due, man.
Thank you.
In a tough business, you found a way to make it work.
Yes, I found a way to make it work. I don't know if it's right, but it works for me.
I think the secret is what you said right at the beginning. You said, I don't do it for the money.
No, I don't. And I had to be honest and realize that there is no money. What is money? You know, yes, I can move into a cluster home and live in the freshest complex.
No.
But is that me having money? No. Am I protecting a future with that approach? No. But...
And even if you bought yourself some flash car, that wouldn't be doing anything smart either.
No, that would be the worst decision.
Oh.
It's you know, like, I'm a farm boy. I'm raised by a father who's in the football business. You know, my family's in the football business. And I've learned a lot from my old man. I learned a lot from my grandfather, who didn't live a life of credit. Everything he owned, he afforded himself. He paid for his first and last car before he passed, cash. He saved all our lives growing up to buy this Hilux Bucky, and he afforded it cash. And he always said to us, don't live a life of credit. I've always known the truth, but of course you have to have some credit.
Sure.
But you choose your credit. And
yeah, like a bond is okay, but
you know what I'm saying?
Owing millions on a car is stupid.
On a Maserati is not quite the way. And
is it true you were born under a tree?
That's very true.
This is amazing, Mubs.
Really?
Your mom was she was on the way to the hospital.
Yes.
And they just didn't make it in time. And you were like, I'm coming now.
Yeah, and I was delivered from my mother.
That is quite an entrance into the world.
Like, I'm here. That is quite.
Have you been to the tree?
Yes, I have. And sadly, for the first time, I went this weekend, family wedding in Ladysmith.
Yeah.
And they've chopped it down.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I've taken enough pictures under the tree. When I married my wife, I took her under this tree. When my son was born, I took him to the tree. We had a picnic under the tree. I've got images. I've got a tattoo of the tree on my leg. As it is, it's a Mkamba tree, which is found in Northern Natal. And I was delivered from my mother by my grandmother and her friend, Coco Flancy. And my grandmother and my mother happened to be born on the same day, the 4th of September.
Sure.
It's the craziest thing, but I found inspiration in it.
There's something there. There's something special there,
you know, and it speaks a lot to my root, you know. That's why I carry the continent on my shoulder. I've got a tattoo of Africa on my shoulder because I feel like I really, you know, if you look at my company logo, it's our
continent. It's Africa with the camera.
Telling African stories. I feel like the special ingredient about who I am is being African. And I travel the world. I see places. I go places. But there's nothing as special as this continent, and I know it, and I understand the history of this continent mm-hmm. and of the Southern African people, and I can tell you something.
You're half Zulu, half Sotho, huh?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's also because I think, you know, the more kind of varied culture anyone is exposed to, the better for them.
Absolutely.
And if you come from like any kind of mix, whether it's a cultural mix, whether it's a racial mix, whether it's a social mix, whether it's political mix, all of those things, that just makes you stronger.
Especially for the kids.
Damn right.
My son is 2 years, 4 months, and he just started play school 3 weeks ago. The uh-huh. first thing the lady said was, because I was worried that he's going to lose the bit of Tswana that he's learned, the bit yeah. of Zulu that he's learned. And the teacher said, a white lady at his school said, don't worry, this is a good thing. Just make sure that you stick to those languages at home, because the English will take over. But the fact that your helper speaks Tswana, that your wife is half Tswana, half Xhosa, and you half Zulu, is a benefit.
Nice.
Go crazy. He's at the age where he can pick them all up.
That's right.
And it makes him...
Kids can, at 2-3 years old, they can learn 5 languages.
Yes, sir.
Easy.
And this is a benefit. Mm. This goes back to being African. In France, films will only be made in French.
Correct.
Because that's the language they speak. We've got layers and layers of culture, language, beliefs, religions that we could draw from. And how dare you stand and say, this is not a plus for you. You know, I travel the world, I go to countries that don't even speak the languages that I speak. But the power of communication is beyond a language. But you possessing language...
Oh no, but they say it's the best thing for the brain.
It's the best thing.
If you could speak many languages or if you can even understand many languages, that means that your brain is working really hard all the time.
Harder than the
You're
average
brain. You're not going to have... You know, Alzheimer's disease one day and all that kind of thing. They said people with multiple lingual abilities are generally fast thinkers.
Keeps the brain fit.
Right.
It does. I mean, and we're so spoiled by apps. You know, I went to Brazil before my wife and I got married. We took a trip to Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay.
Wow.
And we had this little dictionary that would help us navigate and speak to the people. Every time I wanted water, I had to flip a page and go, oh, agua, whatever the words are, asking for water and things like that. And eventually we threw it out the window because we realized that just connect, make the eye connection, just reach, and the human instinct kicks in. And like you say, your brain is working harder than the average brain, and you learn something.
Damn right.
You learn quicker.
And you don't forget that stuff.
You never forget that stuff.
Well, for kids, it's also easy. Now, tell me about this wife of yours, because she's quite extraordinary. And people don't know that you surprised her for her birthday with this unexpected trip to Thailand that everybody thought was the most romantic thing ever.
Everybody?
Everybody.
Okay.
Didn't we? I mean, that's quite a thing, too. I like that. That's a class move, dude.
Cool, man. Yeah, I appreciate
that. How did you manage to keep it secret from her? Because wives know everything.
I couldn't until 2 weeks before we had to leave. I mean, at some point I had to say, look, we're going to have to pack bags and we're going to take the little man. So we need to pack for him. But I think...
Lesejo, you guys, how long have you been together?
4 years next week.
Congrats.
Thank you. Amazing woman. Small town girl, just like myself.
Yeah. Where's she from?
She's from Northwest Letlhakeng.
Wow.
Just off the Sun City.
None of these Joburg girls, huh? None of those.
Not intentionally, but I think, you know, I found, obviously, there was, you know.
Ah, oh, but why? They are so nice.
Nice, Suga. I found something that I really cherished. You know, they say, traditionally, men tend to marry their mothers.
That's okay.
I think there's some truth to that. Mm. Like, my mom is an amazing woman. You know, she raised 5 boys.
Sure.
And she's one of 2 wives. You know, I'm from a family of 15. I've got 9 brothers. I've got 4 sisters. And my mom did well with the 5 of us. And all my brothers and I, we cherish that woman. And I think somehow, unintentionally, the qualities that I sort of appreciate in a woman are ones that I have an experience of, if that makes any sense.
No, it totally does.
So my wife is a small town girl, who has a legal background and an HR background, who's a dreamer, who's a hard worker, who dropped out of the 9-to-5 system 2 years after she got in with a comfortable check and she started her own business.
Jeez.
And 4 years later, she's standing on her own feet. We're both self-employed. We both inspire each other. She is gorgeous. She's a natural. Not that there's anything wrong with how, you know, with the weave or anything. I don't have anything against it. I probably
You're not like Hugh Masekela.
No. I'm not that hectic, but I really appreciate true beauty,
like a natural woman,
clean,
right.
You know, she is that girl,
right?
You know, she's very down to earth. You know, I'm in the limelight, she's not. If she is, it's unintentional, and she's not the kind of woman who's gonna rush to be in that space.
That
with
is
me.
So healthy.
She doesn't.
She doesn't want any of the things you've
she
got.
She doesn't. You know, if she's on the red carpet and you see a picture, you must know that it took a lot for her to walk that carpet. She always walks in the background, and I always walk the carpet. But more than anything, I can dream with this girl. I trust her. I sleep at night. I travel for a month, and I'm cool. You know, she's solid. You know, and if worst case scenario, I know for a fact that my child, my son, or my future children are raised by an amazing woman. Whether I'm there or not, I'll be raising heroes that will contribute positively to society, because we all have the responsibility to add value to community, to Africa, to Earth, and she is that. She holds
family.
That, you know,
family is such an underrated thing. If the family works, everything else falls into place.
And you're stable.
Yeah.
You know, I do so much, and my time is, you know, I'm constantly chasing time, and I feel like the 24 hours in a day is not enough. But if I had serious deep issues and insecurities from the home front,
it would be impossible.
I don't think I'd be a happy person.
But there's so many people in South Africa and in Africa and in the world that don't have that kind of, that bedrock of family. I mean, you talk about your mom, and the way you talk about her is, I can hear that woman put everything into you guys.
Every single thing.
And that sort of sacrifice is something a lot of people don't experience.
No, sadly, you know, and at times
a lot of guys,
tell.
A lot of guys in this country grew up without any male role model. They don't know their dads.
And you can see it in who we are, in our circles. You can pick it up. You can see some of your family. I mean, I was blessed. I was raised by a man and a woman under one roof.
I
got the best of both worlds.
It used to be the way things were, but it's not the way things are anymore.
Yeah, and you can see it in your friends, in your peers, in your colleagues. You can see when a man is missing that something. And you can't say that's the exact reason why they're the way they are, but you can see when people don't have enough of a male reference in their lives from a father or a feminine reference.
Your family must be very proud of you. I mean, because your success is so visible. You know, someone who does well in engineering or law, maybe we don't know necessarily how well they've done. They'll go past a bridge and say, yeah, I built that bridge. But, you know, yours is, it's out there. Everybody can see whether you're doing well or not. That's the thing about the entertainment industry that makes it fantastic, but also makes it really difficult.
It's a gift and a curse.
Because if you're not doing well, if you're not on the screen, then people go, he's finished. It's the end of Tapelo's road. Your parents and your family must all look at what you've done, and they must be really thrilled.
And that's all that matters.
They must be proud as hell.
They are, Gareth, you know, and that's all that matters right now. You know, I think I'm over that whole trying to prove things. I went through it in my 20s where it mattered that I'm seen as somebody who's doing well.
I see some gray hairs in that beard now.
You know.
But it's kind of a distinguished look because you don't look old. Hey, Mubs?
And he's only 34. You're 34.
34, right? It's in the family. Both my parents are gray. We all gray.
It's very distinguished.
From a young
age. Look.
Thank you, sir.
It works.
So I think,
hang on, before you move on, what are the tattoos? You said you've got Africa on your arm. That looks like a movie reel. Oh, it's a camera.
It's a camera. Got that.
Yeah. Actually, camera, movies.
My son's name, cameras, Africa, my son's names, Lireko Cuba Irish.
That's a nice name.
Those are his names.
Yeah. What other tattoos you got?
Just my tree on
your
my
tree
leg.
On your leg.
Yeah, and that's it.
Are they all on one side?
They're all on the left side. I'm left-handed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to get more?
I'm going to finish off this arm. There's a lot of more detail that needs to go on. And that's it. I mean, I'm an actor. I need to... Yeah, I need to not go too crazy.
Yeah.
I worked with Idris Elba, and I mean, he spent 2 hours in the chair before we all came in for makeup because he had to cover up tattoos.
How do they do that in movies?
It's makeup.
But what do they put on you?
It's makeup.
How do they
cover it? Skin matching.
Oh, so
makeup.
It's like a foundation a girl would put on.
It's like
on
a
her
foundation.
Face.
That's it. It's okay. Like a foundation that suits.
I always wondered
your skin tone and.
And doesn't it rub off the whole time? They have to keep reapplying.
Not necessarily. It's designed to stay and not smudge onto your wardrobe and stuff. But I mean, if you are a worthy enough performer, they'll pay the money
the
for that. Yeah, they'll take the trouble.
Now, what kind of... you mentioned Akino Matoso earlier.
Yes, sir.
He's really just one of those people who I think has been a mentor to so many people in the film business.
Yeah.
Talented guy. He's got his head screwed on right. He's done a huge number of
hell
very
of a
successful things.
Too.
Yeah, very consistent. People like working with him.
Yeah.
Is he a mentor? Are there other people that you look up to in the business?
Yeah, look, he's a mentor. He's available for me. He's there. I pick his brain. I sit with him. I talk to him. But yes, he's one of those people I really look up to. He's been brave enough to test different genres. Every time he's got a film out, it's outside of his comfort zone. He's brave enough to go there and tell the stories, and he's consistent.
Yeah.
And he's about his art. You know, he's somebody who's well known in front of the camera and behind the scenes, but he's so trusting and so confident in what he has that he's not trying to prove anything to anyone, but just do what follow his dream. And I mean, there's more people I look up to. Tony Joroge, from a conscious standpoint,
mm-hmm.
somebody who's just rooted and is glued, and he understands who he is, where he is, and what he's trying to become, you know. And is an amazing family man, you know. References. Otherwise, I can't think.
Have you
of
been tempted to go and do your thing in America permanently? Have you been tempted to locate your whole family there and explore the possibilities?
Because never, ever.
Never. Is that because you've got African stories to tell, or is it because you don't know that America is the place for you?
I think it would be very short-sighted to want to move to America. I want to work on American productions, yes. I worked on a British, number one British drama series for 8 years, Wild at Heart, number one Family Feud show on ITV with Amanda Holding and
right.
everybody. But I was always conscious of the fact that our industry, film industry, is at a turning point, and I'm slap bang in the middle of that turning point, and it would be short-sighted to go and try tap into an international industry when mine is budding, when mine is growing, when there's opportunity to become something relevant in its turning point. So I believe in where Africa's going, from an arts point of view. I believe that we are at the turning point, and I believe that there will be a few of us who are remembered and who play an integral part in what the industry becomes 10 years from now.
Mm.
You know, I created the first official mobile cinema in this country purely because, as a filmmaker and as a dream of mine, I don't understand how we are telling stories and we're targeting the average South African, yet there's no cinema or exhibitions
to watch these things.
To watch them.
Yeah.
So I literally, after I made my first feature film with R1 million of my personal savings when I could have bought a house in 2010 from the British series Savings, I decided to take a risk and make my first feature film. It took me 5-6 years to see money back, but I saw it in pieces, so it wasn't worth it. And I realized that I'm shooting myself in the foot. I want to make films forever, but there's nobody to see these films, or there's no platforms for the majority of our citizens in the townships and rural areas to see these films.
So you took a whole lot more of your own money. Now you started a mobile cinema.
How
does it work?
Well, it literally is a cinema like you would a Rosebank cinema or Sandton cinema, except it's outdoor, except it's mobile. So my job and our job as Gussie Movie Nights and Air Movie Nights is to recreate the cinema experience in original and different spaces. So we shut down rooftops, we close streets, we're in parks. I'm going into a very big and special deal, which I think is going to see us go national. But my mission is simply to take cinema to the people. That's our tagline.
That is cool.
Taking cinema back to the people, because I want to do this forever. But I'm not going to do it forever if there is no business at the end of it. So this is one of those, yeah. And I mean, why not?
Your kid has to go to school.
You know, one, yeah. And, you know, my intention was never distribution, but here I am. I found myself tapping into distribution because we are at that turning point. Should there be cinemas in townships and rural areas? Hell yeah. We are the majority of our citizens in these areas. Where's the business? It's a no-brainer, right?
Let's just hold off on the cinemas, because while you've got this mobile cinema working, let's make a meal of that.
Let's make a meal of that. And maybe let's involve the traditional cinemas and let's help them have a footprint in these areas. Let's help them.
They need to increase the number of people who get to see movies too.
Their businesses.
It helps everybody,
yeah,
right?
Their business is suffering.
Are you happy with the level of support by South African audiences when it comes to paying money to go and watch a Mrs. Right guy in the cinema?
No, but there's a reason for that.
That could definitely improve.
That could improve, yeah. And that will that is improving. Let me say.
And part of it is because they don't have access. Ordinary people in South Africa don't have access.
And also the appetite died when we found democracy. You know, the arts suffered because everybody was focused on finding themselves in this new democracy, and the arts took a dip. We used to have drive-ins, they all shut down. There used to be bigger cinema attendances, but also we had a position where we have to reignite the appetite. We need to teach these communities how to consume cinema from scratch. You know, they don't have a need for it. You know, on a Friday, here's the routine. The only time you see black families together is at a funeral or a wedding. And I'm talking about the whole family unit. Otherwise, what happens on a Friday night or on a Friday, we split up. Gogo goes to church. Umalume sits and he puts him a beer drinks with the other uncles. The kids wander off and they go turn up. And I cannot blame them. But mine is to try and offer an option between 5 p.m., for example, and 10 p.m. Still turn up, but maybe you can use this gap to take Gogo out, to involve the family unit and
share
stories. And this is where our communities
because that
die.
Is that is our culture.
That is our culture.
Sharing those stories is what has made much of what South Africa is today.
Yeah,
it's something that we all have in common, whether it's across language barriers, across racial groups, or anything else. Storytelling brings us together. Stories
inspire. They motivate. They rehabilitate.
Sure.
Stories encourage. Help trigger a way of thinking. That's what stories have done in Western communities. You know, stories can infuse patriotism. You know, we can tell stories to really move a nation. I'm glad that, you know, our government is starting to inject more money into the industry. Because
thank goodness, because this is something they really should be doing.
This is it, you know.
I love what you're doing, man, and you really are. You're a storyteller at heart. That's why I'm glad we're ending on this note, because we're out of time anyway. But Tapelo, you've done incredible stuff. This mobile cinema thing is the most exciting thing I've heard of in a long time.
Wow.
I think
that
this
means
is
a
terrific.
Lot. Thank you.
I think you'll get huge support from everybody, not just people who want to go and see the movies at the mobile cinemas, but companies. This is the kind of thing that I'm sure they'd love to get involved in.
Let's hope
and,
so.
And good luck to you, dude.
Thank you.
All
man.
The stuff that you have done, all the stuff that you are doing. We're very proud of the fact that one of our own sons is doing such amazing stuff.
Bless you, man. I appreciate it.
Good and, for you. Love to that lovely wife of yours.
Yeah.
And your multilingual son.
That's great.
Bless him. Bless him. Yeah. I like that. I like that.
And may you guys continue to grow from strength to strength. Yeah, do that. Bring him in here one day when he's ready to become the star himself.
He's the best high fiver on earth.
All right, Tapelo, thank you so much, man.
One love.
Tapelo Mokoena, everybody.
This is CliffCentral.com.